And I figured, I got it now. And she said, no, sir. She says, I'm really sorry. She says, but we were told that we have to have boldface and italic. I said, this someone from up there was talking about boldface and italic? And she said, those are our instructions. I said, boldface and italic. I said, well, I'm awfully sorry to tell you, in that particular type font, there is no boldface and italic. They haven't made it, and it doesn't exist. She said, I don't understand that, because we were specifically told boldface and italic. And I said, well, maybe you better ask again. And she very patiently said, well, why not try and call the company that makes the machine and produces these typefaces and ask them if they could make it for us? I said, well, that would take perhaps years to develop, you know, a typeface. And you're talking about an expense that might be even greater than putting together these books. And she said, well, call them anyway. And kind of smug, I got on the telephone about 5 minutes later and got hold of the man in charge. And this was the Compugraphic Company somewhere in Massachusetts. And I said, look, I have some crazy people that insist upon my using with the Palatino typeface that we're using on some books. They insist upon using boldface and italics, and I know that you don't have, nor do you manufacture, that particular typeface. And the man shot back at me, boy, are you in luck. I said, am I in luck? Why? He said, just this week, we've completed Palatino, boldface, and italic. It is available. And because you're calling now, you can buy it at half price. And I said to myself, that guy up there must really be Jewish, because he likes he likes a bargain as much as I do. And I ordered the font of type. There was another miracle. And we went ahead and had to insert the boldface, the italic, in the work we had already done. And then I had the job of going with the finished type and mechanicals to the printer that I had gotten the best price on printing and binding the books with. And I remember him well. He was a fellow by the name of Mike Quinn, big, strapping Irishman. And the company's name was Quinn and Bowden in New Jersey. And I walked out and I said, Mike, you and I don't know each other, but a mutual friend of ours has recommended you to me. And he told me that your quality is the highest around, and I want you to do the printing and binding on these books. And he had already given me the prices on doing them, so that was not an obstacle. He said, okay, sounds good. He said, when do you want them? I said, well, Mike, and this was already May, I said, I'd like to have them for June 21st. And he sat down and started laughing. And he laughed for about 5 minutes. And he was really, really having a good time. And I looked at him. I said, what are you laughing at? He says, come on in with me. I want to show you something. He took me into a room and showed me a schedule board that took him out to the following December. And I said, Mike, that's very nice, but these people have asked. And they were told that these books would be ready this coming June. And again, he sat down and started laughing. He said, no way. He says, if we doubled the figure, you couldn't get it at that time. And it just is an impossibility. We don't work that fast. And I guess for the very first time in my life, I asked, and I said, I need some help here, whoever you are, because I really want to get these books to the people who want them done. And it would really be great if I could get them done in time to go out to the West Coast. And I said, look, Mike, I said, obviously, I can't change your schedules. Only you can do that. But it would really be neat if we could get this done, because it's really important work. And I think the world might be ready for something like this. And let me ask your indulgence in doing whatever you can to get it done. And he picked up some of the mechanicals, which are the boards with the typesetting on them, and looked at it and started flipping through them. He said, what is this stuff? And I said, beats me, I don't know. I said, but it's supposed to be real important. And the people I'm working with on this are really beautiful folks, and I would really love to get it done. And he started flipping through. He says, you know, he said, my wife is into this kind of stuff. And he says, I bet this would be interesting to her. And I said, I don't know, but if you think so. And I left, patting him on the back and saying to him, well, just do the best you can do. And walked out and left it in his hands. The next day he called me and said he had spoken to his wife and had done some moving of schedules, and that we would have our books going on press, and that he would do his darndest to try and have them finished for June 21st. And I said, well, okay, if you can, it would be much appreciated, and certainly I know that the people would be very happy if that happens. The night of June 21st, we had a party, again on 81st Street. Had no trouble getting a parking space this time. And the books were indeed complete. And we celebrated having the books, everyone that was involved with it, with a very lovely party. And the books were, in fact, taken the very next day out to California by this little dark-haired lady I mentioned quite often. And of course, if most of you don't know, the lady I'm talking about is Judy Scutch. And Judy and I guess fell into an instant love affair, as do most people who meet Judy. She is the personification of what all this is about. And that's what launched the books. Now, it's been a long while, and I know you folks have been very patient sitting all this while, so it might be a good idea if we want to take a stretch or a break, and when we come back from the stretch or the break, I'll answer any questions you might have about the printing of the books, because then we're going to get into the Course in Miracles itself, and then we're going to tell a little bit more. So I hope you've enjoyed the first part of the story, and certainly I'll answer any questions on it. Thank you. Good morning, everyone. I want to tell you a rather bizarre story. Oh, we did that already. Okay. The being that we're going to have lunch in the very, very near future, and I guess everyone is about ready to go for lunch at noon, I thought rather than go into the next segment of what I want to talk about, why don't we just kind of wing it and stay nice and loose, and if any of you have any questions pertaining to the printing or publishing of the material, I'll answer it. If you have any other questions, if it's something that I feel I'm going to cover later on, I'll say so, and then we'll leave it for later on, but I'll answer any and all questions, and I'm sure that most of you have questions, so just fire away if you'd like. Number one, the blue sweater, your name? I would just appreciate if you'd stand up, Tom, and so that we can get it on the microphone, and if you would just go ahead, let it rip.
You mentioned just a couple minutes ago which of these books came through the source.
Would right.
You
repeat them, please? Okay. The question was on our order form, which books actually came through the source, and we might as well call him by name. His name is Jesus, and the he's become somewhat of a very good buddy of mine, and I use his help every moment of my life, so certainly I don't mind giving him a plug. And the books that actually were dictated to Dr. Helen, and let's give her a second name at this point, because I think it's no longer a secret. Her name is Helen Schuckman, Dr. Helen Schuckman, and the man, Dr. Bill, is Bill Thetford. And, of course, I mentioned Ken Wapnick's name and Judy Scutch, and no program would be complete without mentioning my very, very dear friend, Judy's husband, Bob Scutch, who I talk to just about every day. So these are the people that were involved, but in answering the question, the books that were dictated to Helen by Jesus were, number one, The Course in Miracles, number two, The Psychotherapy, number three, The Song of Prayer, and the poetry book, The Gifts of God. The Choose Once Again was put together by Bill Thetford, and the book that is one of my favorites that I really get a great deal of knowledge out of is Christian Psychology in A Course in Miracles. That's Dr. Kenneth Wapnick's book. And we also have on our list the Ken's new book, which is the Glossary Index for A Course in Miracles. So that the but just the ones I mentioned have actually come through the source. And let me just say that all of the books, for the most part, on my listings are done by students of the course. And while they appear to be different, we try and keep them in the vernacular of the same thought system, but saying it in a different way. So that we like to feel that there's nothing in disagreement with the course, And certainly everything I do and want to do is in complete agreement with the course because I'm totally comfortable with that. Any other questions? Yes.
How many books originally, and also how many books have now been printed?
Okay, Nancy wants to know how many books were printed and if we were given a specific number of books. The answer to, as far as number of books were given, no, we were not told any specific number of books, although our first print order was for 5,000 sets of books. So that was a total print order of 15,000 books. And the I might add that the original printing of The Course in Miracles, as we did it, did not have the covers you see on the books today. They had on a denim material, which Helen wanted, and which we did. And the material took stains very easily. And, you know, fingerprints, and they weren't really, they were pretty, but they weren't really workable. And it was her and the foundation's decision, at my suggestion, to change it to the blue, the dark blue vinyl type covers that we now use. And they have been very, very durable and have been used since the second printing. We are now in our 11th printing. Yes. Yes, Sylvia. The question was, are there any plans now or have they been done in foreign language? I just learned this past week that the course is being done in Spanish, that the foundation has approved the course being done in Spanish. And someone has mentioned to me that they're being done in Hebrew, which is, to my way of thinking, a gargantuan task. So obviously the problem, Sylvia, would be finding someone, number one, who is a linguist, and certainly number the bigger problem would be finding someone who is so intuitively in tuned to what this material is really saying, because, you know, who besides Jesus can check it out? Yes.
What's your explanation of why the Jewish people were supposed to be able to do it?
It's a good question, and it's one that's asked a great deal of the time. The question, of course, was why does it seem that a group of Jewish people were kind of in the forefront to get this work done? And the answer that I've come up with, although it's never really been told to me, but I have a really simple explanation that I believe, and that it's totally that the people who would get the job done were handpicked by Jesus to do the job. And all of the people involved were indeed, I feel, handpicked because of the background, because of the experience, because of the knowledge, not so much of what the material was going to say or really be about, but just because the job would get done. Helen took shorthand and took it well. Bill Thetford, being her boss, was a great typist. And their participation, you know, together in receiving the material and putting it together, you know, helped get it to the woman who became the catalyst of getting the other people, you know, in to do their share of the work. So it's a job or a function that we were assigned, and I think that all of us recognize that the you know, that's why we were chosen. The fact that they're Jewish, Episcopalian, or white, black, or that's of absolutely no importance. Because all this, the work absolutely transcends, you know, the any ethnic possibilities. I think it was just that my background was one where I would get the work done and have, and, you know, I'm continuing to do what I've been asked to do. Yes.
I guess I'd just like to ask, was California the main place for circulation and was the foundation for inner peace there at that time?
No. No. The question was California the main place and was the foundation for inner peace there at that time? In the story that I just told, Judy was, when I met her, the president of the Parasensory Foundation. And she was instrumental in bringing probably the greatest minds that the world knows today into this country, if they didn't already live here, and sharing these people with the parapsychological people and introducing them to America. And the at the time all this was happening, I remember well her business card, which she gave me when we started the work, was for Parasensory Foundation. It wasn't until they asked and were guided to go under the name of the Foundation for Inner Peace that that all came about. But it was after the books had already been started. And the, as far as California is concerned, the we did in the very early days seem to get a lot more participation from people in California. It's a nasty rumor to all of us that people in California are far ahead of the people from New York and Detroit and everywhere else, and that's not really true. It's just that I think a lot of the kookies, you know, head for California first and introduce a lot of the stuff. And some of these kookies turn out to be really beautiful, beautiful people with beautiful, beautiful messages. But the foundation moved to California, to Tiburon, well after the books were done. And I think that didn't happen perhaps until the second or third printing was already in the works. Yes.
We'll be going to Marbella, Spain in May. Do you happen to have any contacts over there that are in person that we might get in touch with while we're there?
The question is, are there any contacts in Marbella, Spain? I'm sure there are. As far as I know, right now, we ship books practically all over the world. And the interesting thing about it is that the books have gone to Africa, to England, to New Zealand, to Australia, to Russia, to Israel, and those are just naming a few. I do not have a listing of foreign people. I just don't keep it because it gets too, the paperwork is just unbelievable, you know, in keeping records of these. But if you write to Paul Steinberg, and you can write through me because he and I see each other two or three times a week, I'll pass it on to him. He might have a listing on that. And certainly in this country, Paul does keep a listing of groups all over the country, as do other people. And the couple, that brother and sister team out in Fullerton, California, Richard and Beverly Hutchinson, also keep listings of groups. And they might be able to help you. And Richard, I just spoke to him not too long ago. Richard is starting to travel overseas a great deal, and he might be a good source for getting you know, information on either groups or even bookstores that would know of people, you know, overseas. But yes, I'm sure we've shipped books to Spain. Yes.
I'm just wondering, do you happen to know if a lot of the Jewish people are really going for this particular course?
As a matter of fact, the question is, are a lot of Jewish people going for this type of thought system? Certainly, I can't speak for everyone. I have run into a great many people of the Jewish persuasion who are, and a great many who are not. It's very difficult to change someone's thought system, and we don't try. In other words, we are not here to try and convert anyone from one thought system to another. It's not our function. It is interesting to me, certainly. I meet a great many people of the Jewish persuasion who are absolutely thrilled with Course in Miracles, and I meet a great deal who aren't. And that's okay. I love them both. So that the, I think that we all are searching, whether you're Jewish, Catholic, or anything. We're all searching. We're all looking for a better way. And as far as I'm concerned, Course in Miracles is it. Now, someone stopped me at the break, and I said something which I would like to repeat at this time, and that is this. Judy Scutch said something to me in those very early days when I first got to meet her, know her. And these are her words, and I quote her. She said, "Saul, there are many roads to God. Course in Miracles is only one. But as long as you find the inner peace, whichever road you take is fine." So that we're not really trying to have everyone in the world, turn around and say, okay, get into Course in Miracles. It's the only way you're going to find peace and fulfillment. Because I'm sure that there are many, many people who can look at a symbol, or look at where they're at, or even participate in something that we might consider bizarre, and they're going to find the peace they're looking for. So it doesn't necessarily have to be Course in Miracles. It just seems to be something that's working for a lot of people these days. Yes.
Hi, my name is Doris, and I was just wondering, if you have the opportunity to be in that tape that was written by Ray Bach, cousin had heard. And whom was speaking on the tape? I don't know if I missed that, or mentioned who was speaking and being on the tape. And
okay, I found out that, the world is a very small world. During the break, Dolores came over to me and told me that she had a very friend who lived not too far away from where I live. And I always kind of chuckle when I find out how really small the world is. It seems that Dolores asked me and gave me a name, and the man whose name she gave me has been my binder for 10 years. So it's funny that we should meet here in Detroit and talk about somebody back in Farmingdale. But anyway, to answer your question, Dolores, the tape that was kind of passed around was a secret type of tape, and everybody in those days was really very, very secretive and very, very, cloak and dagger type of stuff. They didn't want to really even have their names associated with anything because they thought that this was off-the-wall kind of stuff. And the answer to, did I hear the tape? No, I never heard the tape. Paul heard the tape, and the tape somehow, very mysteriously, has disappeared, has been destroyed. Nobody even knows where the tape is, as far as I know. Okay? But in answer to the second part of the question, the tape was circulated by a man by the name of Douglas Dean, and that we're going to get into, in the second part of the program after lunch. So we'll talk about Doug, and we'll talk about him and his participation.